We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, King Chitraketu's Lamentation, Text 56. Tvam tata narhasi chamam kripanam matanam. Tvaktum vichasva pitaram tava shoka taptam. Anjastarema bhavanta praja justaram yat. Dvandvam nayaya karunena yamena duram. Tvam, you, Tata, my dear son, na, not, arhasi, ought, cha, and, mam, me, kripanam, very poor, anatam, without a protector, twaktum, to give up, vichakshva, look, pitaram, at the father, tava, your, shokataptam, affected by so much lamentation. Agna, easily. Tarema, we can cross. Bhavata, by you. Aprajadustaram, very difficult to cross for one without a son. Yat, which. Davantam, the kingdom of darkness. Na yahi, do not go away. Akarunena, merciless. Yamena, with Yamaraja. Duram, any further. Prabhupada's translation and purport. My dear son, I am helpless and very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son, we shall have to suffer the distress of going to the darkish, hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore, I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. Purport. According to the Vedic injunctions, one must accept a wife just to beget a son who can deliver one from the clutches of Yamaraja. Unless one has a son to offer oblations to the Pitas or forefathers, one must suffer in Yamaraja's kingdom. King Chitraketu was very much aggrieved, thinking that because his son was going away with Yamaraja, he himself would again suffer. These subtle laws exist for the karmis. If one becomes a devotee, he has no more obligations to the laws of karma. Tvam tata narhasi cha mam kripanam anantam. Tvaktam vichasva pitaram tava shoka taptam anjastarema bhavata prajadustaram yad dvandvam nayad yar kurarane na yamena duram. My dear son, I am helpless and very much aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Just look at your lamenting father. We are helpless because without a son, we shall have to suffer the distress of going to the darkest hellish regions. You are the only hope by which we can get out of these dark regions. Therefore, I request you not to go any further with the merciless Yama. So Queen Kritaduti has stopped talking to Krishna. She's given up on that. And now she's talking to the dead body of her son. And as we said, even though she's in so much distress, she's speaking in beautiful Sanskrit poetry. So here she's making the point that they need a son in order to offer oblations to them so that they will not go to Yamaraj, so that instead they will go to the higher planets. And this concept is there in all of the cultures of the world. In all of the religions and cultures of the world, the children offer some kind of prayers or offerings to their departed ancestor. At least I was brought up in Judaism, and on one day a year, the Day of Atonement, everybody makes an offering to their ancestors, and also on the anniversary of the death of your ancestors. So at least your parents, your grandparents, and then your ancestors in general. I know in China, our devotees have told me, and it's interesting, in China, many of the people who become devotees are older, with grown-up children. You know, when Prabhupada started ISKCON, most of us who joined were young people who had parents, older parents. So it was, in China, it's reversed. And the older people who become devotees, often they stop making offerings to their ancestors, and their children become very upset and say, how will our family go on in heaven if you're not making offerings to ancestors? So I said, well, what kind of things do you offer to your ancestors? They said, we offer incense, flowers, and then we offer like cars and houses made out of paper. So I said, well, you can offer incense and flour to Krishna and then offer that to your ancestors, and they will be benefited. So you can see that having this system in the universe that your children will make offerings for you, and this way you can stay in heaven. What does having this kind of system get people to do? Huh? Act piously, yes. What specifically? Well, they're very specific. There's some very specific behavior that this karmic law encourages people to do. That if after you die, if you want to stay in heaven forever, you have to have a good child who will offer, make offerings to you, and that child has to have a good child who will make offerings. So what does this encourage? Raising good children. Exactly. Having children. It encourages people to get married. It encourages people to have children. And it encourages people to have good children. It encourages people to have children who care about them. You're going to want your children to like you. Yes? Because your staying in heaven is dependent on your children. It encourages you to have children who are religious. Does this sound like a good idea if we had this in society? A very good idea, right? What's happening nowadays, people aren't getting married at all, you know, and it's not that they're all brahmacharis, but they, you know, they're not getting married, they're having all these illicit relationships, they're not having children, and when they do have children, the children are often not very good children. Am I correct? Is this what's happening in 2019? Yes? So Vedic society, the Vedic scriptures, and the laws of God, the laws of karma, encourage people to be responsible. If you're responsible, I mean, it's work getting married, and it's work raising children and having good children. But if you do that, and if you raise your children, that they will marry, and they will have good children. Just like I was recently told by this one very traditional, ISKCON devotee, but very, very traditional South Indian devotee who's a brahmachari. He was telling me that in India they say that if you live long enough to see your great-grandchildren being born, then your life is successful. Prabhupada also quotes this. So he said the reason for this is that this means that you have been able to train your grandchildren. That not only have you lived long enough to train your children, but you've lived long enough to train your grandchildren, and you've seen that the family traditions will go on. And I was thinking, this is exactly what I've been able to do. You know, but nowadays is very unusual. You know, because I married young, I had my children young, and they married young, and they had their children young. So I'm seeing now the births of great-grandchildren. But if people don't marry until they're 35 or 40 or 45, and they have their first child when they're 46. I was just meeting with one old, actually several old childhood friends of mine when I was in New York. And one of them, very, very successful, she knows most of the leading American politicians and people. She's a lawyer in the music industry. And she told me she married very late in life and she had her child when she was 46 years old. She said, I'm probably not going to live to even see my grandchildren grow up. So this is the modern society, and of course people even don't have children anymore. So this way, like Arjuna was concerned about this also, the continuance of the family traditions, yes? He said the problem is if we kill all these people in the war, then the women will be without a family, and the family traditions will not continue, and those who disrupt the family traditions dwell always in hell. So it's very interesting that the Bhagavatam, which throws out all Kaitava Dharma, is still that there's interest in having a sane and peaceful society. That it's not because we're transcendentalists that we have no interest in a sane and peaceful society. We are not a world-negating religion. You know, sociologists talk about world-affirming religions and world-negating religions. We are not either of them. We neither say, go and enjoy the world by the grace of God, nor do we say, reject the world is terrible. We say, use the world in a way that life will be peaceful and happy so you can transcend the world. Have peacefulness and happiness as a base for transcending the world. And so this, we are interested not only in developing Krishna prema, we are also interested in creating a sane society. It's an interest that Srila Prabhupada has, and it's an interest that Sukadeva Goswami has. It's an interest that Krishna has. On the one hand, that's all superficial. Mahaprabhu told Ramananda Roy, this is external. That if you just have a sane society, you will not achieve the goal of life. But having a sane society is also important. It's also very much the will of the Lord. However, we find that people become absorbed in having a sane and peaceful society for its own sake. And Prabhupada compares this like you're cleaning the cage and you're not feeding the bird. Yes, you want your bird to have a clean cage for the bird, not for the cage. You know, we want to have a clean and beautiful temple, not for the building, but for the Lord and for the devotees. You know, so our interest is different. And here we see that Queen Kritaduti is absorbed in this karmakanda. Now, she's not going to stay that way because pretty soon she's going to get some transcendent instruction and so everything will work out, don't worry. In the following verses, she will achieve actual Krishna consciousness. But right now, she's in this mentality that I'm dependent on having a good son or else I'm not going to be in heaven. And again, the idea is you have a good child, that child has a good child, that child has a good child, and they keep offering oblations to the ancestors, and as long as someone in your family is offering oblations to the ancestors, you get to stay in heaven. And this is the kind of immortality that is put forward in a lot of the Vedas. If you want to be immortal, the way to do it is you marry a good person, you have a good child, you train that child nicely, they offer oblations to the ancestors, and you get to go to heaven and stay there forever. Right? What are some other ways that people try to become immortal? Think of some other ways. Do people still try to become immortal by having children? Yes. Not in this way. You're not going to find too many people in Slovenia who think, I will become immortal because my children will offer me oblations. But you think, I will live on through my children. My DNA will live on. My name will live on. Ravindra Suprabhu wrote a wonderful article in Back to Godhead. I started rereading it yesterday, but I never got a chance to finish it. Immortal longings and how the desire for sex and reproduction is very much connected with this idea that through my children I'll be immortal. You know, the parents are always very disappointed if their children do not have children. Right? If the line stops, they say, oh, we don't want our family, because they're thinking, I will live on through my family. And how else do people try to become immortal? Yes, to be in the history books. Exactly. And we find also in the Bhagavatam, especially many of the demons are very interested in this. Many times Krishna will use their interest in this as a way of manipulating them and saying, you know, Jarasandha, if you give in charity, then your name will be glorified forever and you will live on in this glorification. And what is another way that people try to become immortal? Huh? Famous, yes. A very similar kind of thing. To try to get benedictions from the demigods. Okay, so they try to get some kind of blessing. And then people also try to become immortal by being very healthy. You know? Yes, yes, yes. So plastic surgery and... it was very interesting. I saw a photograph not that long ago. This very famous American singer, and she's quite a bit older than I am, and she's had so many plastic surgeries. Plus, she's wearing this wig, and she had all this makeup. But I noticed in the photograph that her sleeves were covering her hands down to here. And I thought, that she cannot fix. You know, like if I look at my hands and I look at the hands of a young person, you can tell by my hands that my body is older. So she was able to get plastic surgery on her face and her body, and she could wear a wig and she could wear makeup, and she could was probably wearing all kinds of clothes to squeeze here and pinch there. And so if you just looked at her, you might think she was 30 instead of 80. But her hands... she couldn't do anything about her hands, so she was covering them. So just the fingers were showing. But people are thinking like that. I'm going to become immortal by, you know, plastic surgery, cosmetics, or by, you know, exercising a lot. Like that that famous singer Madonna, I heard she like works out 6 hours a day to try to keep her body young. Taking all kinds of herbs and vitamins, you know, in this Ayurvedic thing. And people also would try to become immortal in the past, at least through yoga, where they would slow down their breathing and their heartbeat, and they could live for a very, very, very long time through practicing yoga. All right, so do any of these things work? So let's say you have good children who have good children who have good children who have good children, and they keep offering oblations to you. Will that allow you to live in heaven forever? No. Bhutva, bhutva, praliyate. Everything will be destroyed. And of course, even in heaven, abrama, bhuvana, loka, punara, vartina, arjuna, mamupecha, tukantaya, puna, janma, nabijate. There's still distress there. And the other ideas, you know, you're going to have children, so your name and your DNA will go on. Well, how does that help you? You know, like Prabhupada talked about this one Indian prime minister who an astrologer had said became a dog in Sweden. And he said, so, you know, what does it matter that he has children who has children? He's a dog. And the same with becoming very famous historically. Maybe some of us in our past lives were very famous historically. It is entirely possible that somewhere in the world our name is in a history book from another life. That is completely possible. Maybe there's even a statue of us somewhere in some park from another life. What does that do for us? Absolutely nothing. I have one of my Gurukul students, when he was born, several astrologers told his family that this boy in his previous life was a very big guru in India. And still he has many disciples in India that are worshiping him. So what does that do for us? It does nothing. And if we become a dog, it really does nothing. You may become a dog and you may go to the sculpture of yourself in the park and urinate on it. And Prabhupada tells this story of this very rich man. And when he died, he had been a miser, so he became a poor man living down the street, and he was a shoemaker. And he was going door to door selling shoes. And he went back to his house from the previous life selling shoes. And the the sons from the previous life, when they saw him coming, they took the shoes and they hit him with them. So, you know, this is not going to work. And of course, just being healthy, you're still going to die. One time I was taking a course in counseling and teaching, and one of the other students was a medical doctor, and he said that he was always the first in his class, you know, always, in all of his classes, and very athletic. He would run many kilometers every day, very, very healthy, very handsome, very intelligent, very rich, and then he got in a car accident. You know, it's like this. You can be very healthy and very fit, and you can take all the Ayurvedic herbs and whatever you want to take, and you know, we're still going to die. Isn't it? Yes. And if you get a benediction from the demigods, they'll tell you, I'm sorry, I cannot give you immortality. And you can try to trick them. Not inside, not outside, not on land or sea or sky, not in the daytime, not in the nighttime, not by any living being created by you, not by anything living or dead, not by any weapon. Okay, got it. I'm immortal. And the Singhadev said, nope. We can take care of all of those. So it's not going to work. So we should ask ourselves the question, why do we have a desire to be immortal in a world where immortality is not possible? And Prabhupada gives this argument sometimes as to the fact that we are not this body. We have desires that materially are unfulfillable. All of us. Nobody wants to die. I mean, okay, if we're in terrible pain, we may say, I want to die, because we're thinking, at least I won't suffer. But it's not that we want to die, we just want to be out of pain. Yeah? You know, so if there's some physical suffering or emotional suffering, and if somebody could come and say, I will fix all your suffering, then nobody would commit suicide. Yeah? It's not that anybody wants to die. And not only do we not want to die, we want to live a healthy, young life. You know, I don't want to live to be 500 in a 500-year-old body. I don't even want to be like 90. You know, I don't want to be like, you know, and you can hardly walk and you can hardly think and you need diapers again. I don't want to do that. So nobody wants to live old, eternally in a body that's getting more and more and more falling apart. And if you ask old people, what age do you feel inside? They'll all say, I feel like I'm 16. I remember talking to one of my relatives a long time ago, and she was saying that whenever she saw her reflection in a mirror, she's like, who is this lady? Who is this old lady? Because that wasn't how she felt. So we all have this desire to be eternally young and healthy and vibrant. But we're in a world where that's not possible. We get sick, we get old, we die. So why do we have this desire? Because we are eternal. And it's so interesting. I listened to a Prabhupada class pretty much every morning, and this morning Prabhupada was talking about this very thing, and I was really happy. I thought, oh yes, that's what I'm going to talk about in today's class. And Prabhupada was talking about this, how we all want to be eternal because we are eternal. We're already eternal. It's not something we have to achieve. Na jayate miyate vakadache na yambutva bhavitava anabhuya ajo nitra sasvato yampurano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. We are Purana. We are very old. We are eternal. We have no creation and we have no end. But in this world, we become full of fear because we're in this very fragile body. I mean, it's really fragile. Yeah? Have you ever gotten really hurt by doing almost nothing? You know, I one time broke my toe because I was mopping the floor. And my foot went into a chair. This is some small thing, you know, such a fragile body. You just, you know, you eat some food that has a rotten part and you become sick. So, but how do we really become eternal? All we have to do is wake up to the fact that we already are. That's all. So therefore, Prabhupada's saying here that if one becomes a devotee, we're not involved in these laws of karma about how to get this false immortality. It doesn't concern us anymore. I mean, we should still have another motive for having a sane and stable society. And I think we have a problem in ISKCON with this. That we no longer have the karmakanda motives for heaven. We no longer care, well, I have to get married and have a good child so I'll go to heaven. And then we just say, well, I just don't care at all. You know, so who cares about having a stable society? We're transcendentalists. So I think, you know, we can have that kind of problem. But we should want to have a sane and stable society because it will please the Lord. It will please Srila Prabhupada. Right? A devotee just wrote me a message this morning. He says, I no longer care about having a nice family and a job so that I can be happy in the world, but I still need a family and a job, and I don't have my motive anymore. I said, you need to have the motive to please Krishna instead of to try to enjoy this world. You know, so I should have a good family so Krishna will be happy. I should have a good child so Krishna will be happy. I should have a career according to my nature so Krishna will be happy, not so I'll want to enjoy the world. This is the whole message of Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Where Arjuna's like, I don't want to do anything in the world anymore. It's all lousy and rotten. I'd let me just walk away. And Krishna says, no, do it for me. Do it in another consciousness. So certainly we should do that. It's part of our duty to Srila Prabhupada. It really is part of our duty to Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to try to establish a sane and stable society. And not to discourage people who want to do that. Not to tell everybody getting a job is Maya, having a good kid is Maya, getting married is Maya, it's all Maya. You know, we're not impersonalists. We're not impersonalists. We're not voidists. But we shouldn't think that having a sane and stable society is what's going to give us immortality and what's going to fulfill all of our desires directly. That's what's Maya. What's Maya is thinking, if I get a good wife, if I get a good husband, if I get a good son, if I have a good career, I will be happy and immortal. That's nonsense. We're going to become happy and immortal by remembering that we're spirit soul. But we still want to make a nice society, but with different motives. We do want to be an international society for Christian consciousness. You know, sometimes I'll say that. We're not just ISKCON. You know, we're not just international Krishna consciousness. We're an international society. And there, one devotee found a temple where their sign outside the temple, the S had fallen off. It just said ISKCON. So they sent it to me, and I posted it on Facebook. And the temple president from that temple was very angry. Wrote me this letter. Why did you post this picture? So we do want to encourage this again. Prabhupada says marriage is for making the mind peaceful. We want people to have good children. Right? We were talking yesterday about engaging the teenagers. We want good children. Without having good children in our society, our movement is not going to continue. This is something we care about. We want people to have careers that are according to their nature, like we talked about last night. It's a very strong theme in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam, to be engaged according to your nature. We do care, but we don't think that's the solution. We don't think if you just have it together in this world, you're going to be happy and you're going to be eternal and you're going to be satisfied and all your desires are going to be fulfilled. And so this wanting a sane and stable society and being transcendentalist is not very common in the world. Most religions and religious systems are one or the other. You know, most religions either tell you the goal of religion is to have, you know, a pious family and give in charity, right? I mean, in America, it's very much like that with the Christians. Family values. And then you'll go to, and the Mormons, you know, get married in the temple and then you'll have an eternal marriage. And I always think, does everybody want to be eternally married to their spouse that they have right now? I don't think so. I don't know what the percentage is, but my guess is it's kind of small. Even people who have a happy marriage, like, do I want to stay with you forever? But so they have this, you know, you'll be eternally married to this person. And you get to be with your family in heaven forever. You know, what to speak of your spouse? Maybe you don't like everybody in your family. Does everybody here like everybody in their family? Would you really want to be with everybody in your family forever? I don't know about that. I had some kind of funny cousins, you know. I got to live with them for eternity. So that, you know, the religions are pushing this kind of thing. The Jehovah's Witnesses, they say, we're going to make heaven on earth. All the dead people are going to pop out of their graves. And I said to them, how old will they be when they pop out of their graves? You know, suppose you died when you're 90. Do you pop out as 90? Do you have to be eternally 90? Of course, they don't have any scripture for this. They just make it up. Suppose you died when you were 2. Do you have to be eternally 2? And suppose you were ugly. Do you have to be eternally ugly? You know, it's like... Anyway, they don't have any answers for this. But you have these religions who are propounding that we want to enjoy the world. Or, you know, the Muslims who say you'll go to heaven and you'll have, what is it, 72 virgins. And I don't know where they come from, all these... And then, you know, and you get to drink this soma ras and you live in the gardens and you be... So there are many religions that are preaching like this, that take up our religion and you will enjoy the world. And then there are the religions that preach, get out of here, like the Buddhists. Forget the world, it's all false, just transcend the world, don't do anything in the world. And we, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we don't take either extreme. We're not saying the world is false, get out of it. And we're not saying stay here and enjoy the world. In fact, Prabhupada writes in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 14:22-25 that the way we transcend the modes of nature is neither trying to enjoy the world nor get out of it. And we're saying, Janme Janme Prabhu say, I'm happy to serve you birth after birth. Right? Mama Janmani Janmani Shrey Bhavatad Bhakti Ahoy Tuki Twai. So we're not just saying renounce the world, but nor do we say that anything in the world is a solution. And I think that many of us in the Hare Krishna movement have a hard time with this. You know, we really have a hard time with this. That how are we going to encourage the ashrams and the varnas and yet be transcendentalists? How do we encourage people? You know, you're 20, 25, you should get married, you should have children, you should get a proper career, and at the same time be transcendentalist. And how do we be transcendentalists when people's material life is falling apart? And we have to spend so much time and so much energy helping people with the material side of their life instead of talking about Krishna. Have you ever noticed that? You know, we should be a society where we're talking about, oh, we only have, now we have elephants today. They've lost the cows. So now Mahaprabhu must be walking through the Jarikanda forest. But we should have some deer also that dance with the elephants. Yeah. So that's, we should be able to talk about Mahaprabhu going through the Jarikanda forest and dancing with the elephants and getting the tigers and the deer to kiss each other in the forest. That should be like 90% of our absorption, and instead we're having to spend 90% in our absorption in, you know, okay, how are you going to earn a living? How are you going to pay your debts? How are you going to find a nice wife? How are you going to raise your children? I mean, I'll just tell you, practically, as I travel the world, people are mostly interested in those topics. Those are the kind of things that we get asked to give seminars on again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Like there was one church, nobody was coming to their sermons. And then they put out a sign, what to do if you think you married the wrong person? And instead of 20 people, 2,000 people came. So if we could establish a sane society where people were peaceful and people were satisfied, then guess what? We'd be in a really good position to focus on transcendence. If we had a really dynamic brahmachari ashram where people were engaged in studying the shastra, which is what the brahmachari ashram is for, right? Like this temple, you have all this deep study of the shastra, but you're not common in the world. Most temples I go, nobody studies the shastra. And where people are preparing for a livelihood, if we had a good grahastha ashram, a good vanaprastha ashram, good sannyas ashram, people were engaged according to their nature, then we wouldn't have to spend our time and energy on these things. Wouldn't that be nice? That would be really nice. Yeah. So therefore, we as the pioneers, ISKCON's only been here for 50 years. That's our excuse. But anyway, it's a good excuse. We'll use it. So, you know, we've only been around for about 50 years. So we need to work on both tracks. We need to work on the track of establishing society, and we need to work on the track of transcendence, both. And then if we do that properly, we will experience eternity now. We'll no longer be concerned, I have to have a child so I can be eternal. And we might be lamenting like this, albeit in beautiful poetry, but still. beautiful. She's lamenting in beautiful. She's expressing her illusion in beautiful Sanskrit poetry. But we will not be lamenting like this. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions. The Prabhu who always knows when to get the mic, he's not here. Anybody? Any questions or comments? Yes. You want to get the mic for those people. For the invisible people. You want the mic.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. My thought about immortality. I have a very nice experience. In my regression, I saw how what I do in the past to become immortality. I made a famous portrait.
Uh-huh.
And put in the museum.
Uh-huh. Did that give you immortality?
In
one sense.
Yes, in one sense. And I when I was prepared for this pop to sit on the chair for the painter, I think about would I found myself 100 years later. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else? Yes? Ananta? Someone want to bring over the... Yeah, we don't know. We don't have our microphone running person.
Hare Krishna.
You going to ask me another controversial question?
maybe not. Just wonder about these mechanics, how these oblations works actually, how that works. What is this oblation and how it works that they get some kind of...
Well,
usually they do it in the sacrifice, but how What is the mechanism?
The way I understand it is they're basically doing something pious on behalf of somebody else. It's like you're paying somebody's bill for them. You know, you're putting money into their account. I mean, I'm sure we know of some children who give money to their elderly parents. Yes? So they, you know, the parents don't get enough with their pension, and so the children are sending 200 euros a month or something into the parents' account. So I understand it's like that. You're doing some pious activity, but you're giving it to someone else. There's my godbrother Sridhar Maharaj, when he was leaving his body, he requested me to write an article about praying for other people. So it took me a few years to actually do it. But I did write this article. It got published in Back to Godhead. And one can do pious activities and offer those results to someone else. So, and the demigods note that. The controllers of the universe, they note that. That you're doing this, but you're not putting it in your own account. I mean, any time we give charity, it's like that. I'm earning something, but then I give it to someone else to enjoy. Now, of course, when you give in charity, you also get good karma. So when you offer oblations to your ancestors, you get the good karma of offering oblations to your ancestors, so it benefits you as well. Does that make sense? If I give 500 euros in charity to a worthy person, I get some good karma, and I will get that money back, actually. In fact, if you give it to a very worthy person, you get it back with interest. Prabhupada says if you give to a pure devotee, you get it back unlimitedly. So you're not really losing when you give in charity. You actually gain. So the same way when the children do these activities and they offer it to the ancestors, both benefit. But one can also, like, one can pray for others. There's many examples in the Shastra of following Ekadasi for the benefit of others, doing some austerity and offering that to others. There's several stories in the Puranas, like where some ancestor was suffering in hell and the children were told, you know, follow Ekadasi and have the result go for that person. I mean, Prabhupada told us to chant the Nisinga prayers every day as an offering for his health. That's why we started chanting the Nisinga prayers every day.
So it's about intention.
Yes. Yes. And the intention is, you know, the rituals, the intentions are stated. You state the intention. I mean, we're supposed to always state our intentions. We're supposed to always state a sankalpa. But yes. And there are controllers in the universe who note that. What are your intentions? Where do you want this to go? And so then there's good karma being put in their account, because in the heavenly planets, you can create good karma in the heavenly planets also. But generally people don't. It's like, you know, if you go on a vacation, you could also earn some money, but usually on a vacation you just spend your money. Yeah? So generally when people go to the higher planets, they're just spending their good karma. They're not really making any more. And so they're dependent on someone else putting deposits in their account. But you could, I mean, on the heavenly planets, you could. Just like one could go back to Godhead directly from the heavenly planets. It's not like you have to come back here. So you could continue to do pious deeds there and stay there that way. But again, there's kind of a, you know, there you are in heaven, why should you work? There's that kind of mood there. Yes? We need a microphone.
Connected with yesterday lecture, when you said that we cannot do nothing for others, it's all only for our good benefit. So how is this relate with this you share now?
Oh, very nice. So how is it that the children are offering this good karma to their ancestors? That's because the ancestors did the work of raising good children. It's really their good karma. So it's kind of a trick of the laws of the universe, because raising good children is not easy. It takes a lot of work to raise good children. So why should you do it? Well, if I raise good children, they'll offer me their good karma. But you've actually created your own good karma by raising the good children. So they're just the agent of your own good karma, really. And again, you got good karma by doing tapasya. So whatever you're enjoying, you paid for it. So you're not getting any absolute increase. Therefore, we devotees are not interested in these things. This is why Prabhupada says, we're not interested in this. We're above these things. We're not, or we should be, we're not enveloped in this sort of calculation. That doesn't mean you don't have good children as a devotee. It doesn't mean you say, well, I don't care. I'll just be irresponsible. But we should try to have good children to make Krishna happy, to make Srila Prabhupada happy that this movement will go on. That it may look the same, but the motive will be very different and the experience will be different. But anyway, yeah, it's only apparent. Now, spiritually, you can pray for somebody and actually give them something good that they didn't earn. That you can do. Karmically, no. But spiritually, yes. I mean, it says in, Rupa Goswami says in Nectar Devotion that it's possible to become Krishna conscious just by the well wishes of another devotee. That if a devotee just wishes you well, and then, oh, I hope you become Krishna conscious. I was at New Vrindavan when Bhakti Tirtha Swami did this very interesting demonstration of the power of wishing well to others and the power of wishing ill to others also. If all of us wish well to with the others, then there will be a lot of spiritual potency in our communities. We talked the other day about not criticizing. I mean, if we actually appreciate each other and wish well to each other, we give strength and energy to each other. And actually, spiritually, we have that ability as a jiva, even though we're very small. Why? Because Krishna loves his devotees, and so if his devotees wish well to someone, he fulfills that desire. Isn't that cool? It's totally cool, huh? We can do real good for someone. I'd really like this person to be Krishna conscious. Krishna makes note of that. And he'll help that person. Even if they don't want it, he'll give them some help. Because the devotee wanted it. What did Lord Chaitanya say? Even a dog in Srivas's house, even the servants are very dear to him. Anything else? Yes.
I have just one rhetorical question.
It's a rhetorical question, okay. The switch went off, maybe. Okay, good.
You observe the Anagadashi and you do put the results to others, that this mean that you skip Ekadashi and you must do the Niranjala Ekadashi?
Oh, that was very clever. No. Oh,
okay.
You have very thoughtful people here in Ljubljana. They're really thinking. So many of your devotees here, you know, they're really thinking about this and that. No. You still get counted that you've done Ekadashi. As I said, when you give in charity, Let's say you give somebody 500 euros in charity. You no longer have that 500 euros in your pocket, but you have this good karma from giving them money, and you will get that 500 euros back. And if you gave to a qualified person, you'll get 1,000 back, or 5,000 back. So did you really lose any money? No. So it's like that. And if you give 500 euros in charity to make Krishna happy, then you have eternal, unlimited opulence in the spiritual world. So you haven't really spent any money at all. So it's the same if you offer a codicil to someone. You haven't given up anything. Yeah. No, don't worry. Okay, thank you very much, and thank you very much for your hospitality here, and it's a wonderful, enlivening temple. And thank you to the pujari who overslept this morning, so I got to offer Mangal Arti. I was remembering, it would be about 42, 43 years ago, I was a pujari in Boston for Radha Gopi Balava, and I had to do the noon arti. So I had a young child, and what I would do is I would put him down for his nap. So he would take a nap, and one of the other ladies would watch him, and then I would shower, and I'd go on the altar. And one day when I had him take a nap, I also fell asleep. So it was like 12:10, and the head pujari was knocking on my door and woke me up. So now I got to I offended the deities by being late. So finally I got to make that up today by offering artik when another pujari overslept. So I finally got the opportunity and I got to take care of Panchatattva. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.